This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. As many listeners know, Renee's been reporting on Afghanistan 5 years after the fall of the Taliban. 5 years ago, the Taliban had just fled Kabul. Victory elsewhere was in sight. But the institutions most needed to protect the nation were in shambles: the army, the courts, and the police.
This week, we look at how far Afghanistan has come in restoring those forces of security and justice. Today, the police. We go now to the sort of call a policeman in Afghanistan might have to respond to at any moment. This on the main road leading to the Kabul airport.
You hear stories every day in Afghanistan about police being targeted by terrorists and suicide bombers. And here today there was a suicide bomber that the police were chasing and who blew himself up before they caught him. Luckily only three people were injured. We met one young policeman. Could I have your name?
Noma Abdul Muqim.
And you witnessed the explosion?
Well, we got here, and this place was surrounded by police. I saw a taxi which was parked here, and the police told us that these suicide attackers, so don't go there. As soon as we turned back, he blew himself up.
That this bomber killed only himself is a minor miracle, since every few days, police in Afghanistan die in suicide attacks and roadside bombs. When Afghanistan touts what's been accomplished these past 5 years, it points proudly to a force of 40,000 police officers. But in villages many miles from the capital, Kabul, policemen are few and far between. Take the Panjwai district west of Kandahar. A convoy of armored vehicles carrying NATO forces rumbles by the district police station. Billeted in a school across the street is the Afghan National Army, known as the ANA. The police station is a concrete hulk of a building. Inside, a tall, sleepy-eyed man in a green uniform introduces himself as Deputy Police Chief Brahim.
Without ANA and coalition forces, we cannot protect this district because it's a very big district and we have only 64 police. So 64 cannot protect this district from the enemy.
Assistant Police Chief Brahim sits cross-legged inside a big empty room. No computers, no files, nothing to suggest that any police business is being done. He says he earns just over $100 a month, his men about $60, in a place where the Taliban are reputed to be paying that much a day to hire fighters. It's impossible to support a family on the salary paid to those charged with fighting crime. As it happens, says Brahim, there's not a lot of crime here lately because thousands of villagers have fled the fighting with the Taliban. But poppy thrives along with the drug lords.
There is so much poppy grown in this region. Can the police possibly tackle the problem, given their equipment and their numbers?
He said that I have boss, and I can say the thing that which is not under my power. It depends on my boss, what he can do in this case.
And with that polite non-answer, the assistant police chief thanks us and says the interview's over. One leading authority on Afghanistan does have an answer. New York University fellow Barnett Rubin is in Kabul now. He says a UN report is coming out in a couple of weeks on drug trafficking.
One of the conclusions of the study is that the organization that controls and protects most of the drug trafficking in Afghanistan is the Ministry of the Interior.
Which is the police.
Which is the police, yes. It doesn't mean that the Minister of the Interior is the head of the drug trade, but it means in every district where there is drug trading going on, the police chief of that district is most likely on the payroll of the drug traffickers. And those positions are actually bought and sold. For instance, I was told that someone paid $100,000 in order to be appointed the police chief of one drug-producing district in northern Afghanistan for 6 months. And that's $100,000 to get a job that pays about $60 a month. So, obviously, he thought he could make back his investment.
Barnett Rubin is among the fiercest critics of the Bush administration's reconstruction efforts. Shortly after the Taliban fled, he says, the Pentagon backed off an early offer to train police, preferring to train Afghan soldiers who could help the U.S. chase terrorists along the border. The result? A failed police force. No one knows this better than Major General Bob Durbin.
The problem of corruption goes back to the culture of survival. You do what you need to do to survive. And so what we would refer to as corruption, as compromise integrity, is something that is looked upon as what is needed to do to survive.
General Durbin heads up the Security Transition Command. That's a U.S. program that has belatedly taken over training Afghanistan's police. Sitting at a picnic table behind the sandbagged walls of America's Camp Eggers in Kabul, I put this to him.
Afghan people that we talk to aren't impressed with the idea that the police have to survive. When they talk about the police, it's like they're corrupt. They're not going to come when we need them. They're not very good. That's a tough...
It's a challenge, and that's the Afghans' part of the strategic bargain.
But does that mean massively firing incompetence?
I would say we've already begun that. We had 326 senior general officers, and of that, we have chosen 31, and the rest have been removed from their positions. Incompetence and corruption are the two criteria. If you are incompetent, you will be removed. And if you are corrupt, you will be removed.
Are you at all worried about police who are trained, possibly armed, who are now without jobs, going over to the insurgency, something like that?
The process has a severance package with it. They will, in fact, be paid a year's salary. And in order to be able to be paid, they have to report in each month that they have another livelihood, because we do have concerns as to what potentially disgruntled leaders who have been in a position of influence would do with their previous influence.
All of this takes us back to the thin, in Afghanistan, green line. Among those responding to that suicide bombing near the Kabul airport is Officer Noor Rahman. He's arrived in a T-shirt and without a gun. Guns are precious, and his is back at the police barracks. His reasons for wanting to join the police would be familiar to any police family in America. His father and brother are in the Army, and since he was a kid, Noor Rahman has wanted to wear a uniform.
This is a delicate question, but I have to ask it. There are those who say that the salaries are so low with the police that someone who needs to feed a family is tempted to take bribes. Have you? You've heard that probably. What is he saying?
Please finish fast because we expect more attacks here.
Okay, we'll go. We'll hurry.
Well, bribery exists in all countries. It's very difficult to prevent from bribery, especially in Afghanistan. But when I got the job, I was sworn in, and I still support my swear. I think I'll stick to my oath.
And here, Noor Rahman underscores his point by switching to English.
Because I love my people. I love my job.
A job that American trainers hope Afghanistan's police will be able to do professionally in just a few years. And late last month in Kabul, a national college for training commanding officers opened its doors. The very first class of trained leaders will graduate next spring, more than 5 years after the war began. Tomorrow, Afghanistan's courts, starting with a trial where this man, charged with killing a policeman, cries out his innocence. Photos and more stories on Afghanistan 5 years after the fall of the Taliban are at npr.org.